This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Remaining on high alert.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. The UK says the threat level today remains critical. That's its highest level. In London and here in the US, it's another day of long lines and security checks for people traveling internationally. The Bank of England published the names and addresses of 19 of 24 arrested suspects and has frozen their assets. News of the planned terrorist attack didn't prompt the predictable response from Wall Street. Usually nervous investors shy away from stocks and move towards the safety of, say, gold or utilities. Just the opposite happened yesterday. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains.
Standard & Poor's chief investment strategist Sam Stovall has examined trading patterns in the wake of four terrorist attacks. After 9/11 in New York, he says, stocks recovered losses within a few weeks. After the Madrid bombings in 2004, the recovery only took a few days.
And then after the London bombing, we recovered prices in a matter of hours. This time around, we basically didn't even blink an eye.
Stovall is careful to make a distinction between the thwarted plots and those deadly attacks. But in the past, he says investors quickly returned to business as usual.
The attacks bumped investors off of that trend for a short period, and they simply got back on track.
Is that why gold did poorly? Stovall says speculators may have stayed on the sidelines, having learned in the past that investors aren't so timid, and any knee-jerk rush to gold would be modest, temporary, and not worth the effort. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
The Dow rose 48 points yesterday, and the Nasdaq was up 11 points. Fighting between Israel and Hezbollah continues and for the first time now spans the entire length of Lebanon. Meanwhile, that country is facing a serious electricity crisis. An Israeli attack destroyed the storage tanks for much of Lebanon's fuel for electrical power plants. And two ships waiting in Cyprus with 80,000 gallons of fuel oil and gas are refusing to deliver their shipments, fearful of an Israeli attack. Ben Gilbert reports from Beirut.
Residents of Beirut used to have 24 hours of electricity, but not anymore. 10 to 15 hours of power is all they're getting now. On the streets, the power cuts are evident everywhere. Generators rumble on every city block, spewing carbon dioxide into the already humid city streets. Minister of Transportation, Mohammed Safadi, says the country's meager supply of fuel for electricity is alarming.
So today, as a guess, it depends on how many hours now we have electricity from these generators. Maybe a week, maybe less, maybe a bit more.
Safadi says the power cuts have left much of southern Lebanon in the dark. He says some power is coming over the lines from Syria, but that won't be enough to support vital services like hospitals if the fuel runs out.
So some hospitals might suffer severely, you know, because of that and have to shut down because they hardly have got electricity in the areas where they are. And you know, if they don't have fuel for their generators, then you know, they cannot run hospitals anymore.
The World Health Organization has warned that up to 60% of Lebanon's hospitals will have to shut down if the fuel does not arrive soon. In Beirut, I'm Ben Gilbert for Marketplace.
Oil dropped a bit yesterday, but rose again today. U.S. light crude oil rose 45 cents to $74.45. This is Marketplace. For farmers in Texas, immigrants from Mexico are a lifeline to their livelihood. That's what they plan to say to Congress today. David Martin Davies explains their situation.
The Texas Produce Association represents over 5,000 commercial farms in the Lone Star State. The group says the current debate over immigration reform is hurting members because it's scaring away farm workers. Jay Carnes is a produce grower in Uvalde, Texas. He said during the recent harvest, 40% of his workers decided to stay in Mexico rather than risk crossing the border.
time frames were running 2 to 3 weeks behind, and you have severe quality issues when you run 2 to 3 weeks behind, and it was so hot, it was literally burning up in the field.
The Texas Produce Association says if the House of Representatives' version of immigration reform becomes law, it will gut farmers' labor supply, and it could put two-thirds of them out of business. In Uvalde, Texas, I'm David Martin Davies for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Medtronic, partnering with physicians, patients, and diabetes educators to provide better glucose control for long-term diabetes management. Information available at Medtronic.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
This is Marketplace. I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Sometimes the box office that counts most for a film isn't here in the U.S., but overseas. The Da Vinci Code grossed $217 million here in America, but raked in over $520 million in foreign box office receipts. Mike Spire is an entertainment editor for the Daily Variety. I asked him when overseas box office started to have such a big impact on American films.
When the studios became part of conglomerates, which you kind of argue about 15 years ago, maybe, when every studio started to be owned by something bigger instead of on its own, that's when box office overseas became so important, because now all of these studios need the most money they can get all at once, because they are now owned by major, major corporations who need the money.
Explain this a little bit more. Why do they need more money because they're owned by a bigger company?
Because they have bigger overhead. They have all these conglomerates own so many units, so many people work for them. They're not just an independent studio anymore. They're now run by major, like Sony owns Columbia. So now Sony is the bottom line. They have to appease shareholders. And major, major money and major, major box office all around is what they need to survive. That's why they released Spider-Man 3, Shrek 2.
Well, that leads me to the next question, which is then why aren't all studios always making nothing but blockbusters?
Because there's also creative people in the film industry, and they want to have
no.
these small – believe it or not, A, they're independent studios. They're independent companies that want to make films. And actually, the major conglomerates do make smaller films because they have niche arms, what we call them. Universal has focus features, which make things like Brokeback Mountain. We have Sony Pictures Classics.
We got to have something that can run in Limley.
Exactly. And you have big, big films to make the money while you have the nice prestige and the Oscars for the smaller films.
Are the DVD sales just as lucrative for foreign markets as the box office revenue?
They are, except America is by far the biggest DVD rental, sales, everything on earth. So, yeah, while it's gravy for these studios to have this extra DVD money that never existed 7, 8, 9 years ago, America is still such a big chunk of that.
Can you give me some examples of movies that did well overseas that didn't do too well here?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few recent examples. The Island, which is the big Michael Bay kind of disaster in America, which everyone kind of yelled at and screamed at, wrung their hands over. But in the end, this is a movie that got more than $100 million overseas. Now,
in what country?
In added up. And that's the point, actually, is that once the bottom line is tallied up, even though it only makes, let's say, $30 million over here, they'll argue.
It made that much here?
Yeah, surprisingly. They'll argue that $100 million is $100 million. It doesn't matter where it comes from. But, you know, that's an example of a movie that in the end did okay. Then there are some movies that, something like Memoirs of a Geisha, which everyone expected to do really, really well in America, but it only made about $50 million. It didn't do very well at all for a very major movie come Oscar time. But overseas, it almost doubled that. And so that's another movie that in the end, $150, $200 million, money's money, and that's really the bottom line.
Mike Spire is an entertainment editor for the Daily Variety. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
4 years of college, 2 years of
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.